Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags with a brisk 30 minutes on the latest in South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast. I'll bring you insightful interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise and informative update. It's Tuesday, the 16th of April. Coming up on the program, the Higher Education Ministry on the firing of the NSFAS board, a new flood crisis for KwaZulu-Natal, this time on the south coast. More questions over the Canal Plus bid for multi-choice, the mental health crisis for black chartered accountants will give you another perspective, and why a leading cough medicine for children was taken off the shelves. Let's start with this. And the South African Weather Service issuing a level 5 weather alert for disruptive rain over eThekwini and along KZN's south coast. Flooding has already occurred in parts of Margate. Let's start the program with Zodwa Msindle, who is the mayor of the Ray Nkonyeni local municipality. Mayor, good afternoon to you. And first of all, your sense of the scale of the damage.
Right now, what is happening under Ugu or Renkonyeni, we are still busy with the assessment of the places where it is affected by this storm. But as we are speaking now, we are waiting for MEC from Etia, or Mr. Duma. MEC Moloi came in yesterday. We went to do the assessment together with them, and they promised that at Lamontville, where there was the one person who passed on due to lightning, they are going to put the lights there to prevent the issue of lightning, because we can see that area is very bad. When there is lightning, it's always go there and affect the people. So they are going to install the lightning conductor in Lamont on Ward 29 today.
Are you able, Mayor, to give me a sense of the scale of the damage? What have you seen?
The incident that's occurred in Ugu district is that the areas that are affected, it's Nkongweni area in Margate. The whole of Margate is badly affected. The roads are blocked. You cannot travel using those roads. And also in the locals, the houses are also broken down. The trees fell on top of the houses, because after the rain, there was a little bit of storm. And most of the bridges, especially in the area of Renkonyeni, outside the Avenue, Link Road, Bank Street and Marine Drive, and bridging Erasmus Road of Ward 2 in Margate area, was affected around at 8 o'clock on that day. There was 5 people who passed on. Now, the 3 were washed away from the road in Ramsk in Margate. And the other one was cleaning his house in St. Old, the Indian male, was cleaning the house where the water came in the garage, and then he fell. And the another one was the one who was struck by the lightning in Lamontville.
Mayor, how is the municipality addressing the immediate needs of those affected when it comes to things like food, clothing and housing?
There is Igagasi FM is giving us food parcels to give to the community. Ilovo is giving us food that we give to the community, including the blankets and the mattresses. And also the gift of the givers is also helping us. And the other non-profit organizations are also helping us to give people the assistance that they need. And we are also giving them shelter. But as it is now, there is no one who needs shelter. All the people have got a place to stay. There is no one who is staying in the halls. They are staying with their families in their houses. This is where they are now.
Mayor, if there is more rain to come, and there is every likelihood that there will be, do you have plans in place for communities?
We've got plans for communities. There are houses that we can accommodate them. Under the municipal name. We are going to accommodate those people. We are going to give them shelter. We are also going to give them support, but we are hoping that this rain is going to stop now because it has caused a lot of damage in our area.
Could you describe what Margate looks like after the flooding?
It's a disaster. The trees are all over in the road. The roads are closed. Our yellow plant, together with our team, they are busy working to take out whatever is on the road so that it will be drivable. And also along our beaches, most of our beaches are affected with a lot of trees and a lot of people's things that have been washed away that are there on the sea. And also the Wimpy area is badly affected, together with the one place that is called the Grove, and some other houses are also affected. As it is now, our beaches are temporarily closed. I think it's 10 of them. It's Ibadin, Umzumbe, Southport, St. Michael's, Uvongo, Manaba, Margate, Ramsgate, and Trafalgar and Port Edward. They are also closed. And also, some of the municipalities are affected, especially at Umdoni Municipality, the closure of Esperanza Bridge under Ward 11. Umzumbe, they also had reported the damage in the 953 under Ward 20, and Chestnut Drive under Ward 18 in Rainkongeni is also partially washed away. So people are asked not to use those roads because it's still bad.
Just finally, Mayor, are there gaps in your current disaster response capability? What do you need to fix?
I don't think there is anything that we need to fix now. Up until we get the full report, that is where we will know this is what we need to fix and this is what we need to do. At the moment, I cannot give you the straight answer on this one because we are still busy assessing the damages.
Mayor Mzindli, thank you very much indeed for talking to me today.
MoneyWeb at midday. For all your up-to-date stories.
Two batches of Benadryl cough syrup have been recalled after high levels of diethylene glycol were discovered in the medicine. According to the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, we know it better as SAHPRA, this is a toxic compound that could be fatal if consumed. Joining us now is Daphne Fafudi, who is Manager Regulatory Compliance at SAHPRA. Welcome to you. And firstly, can you explain to me how the high levels were initially detected?
NAFDAC, which is Nigerian National Agency for Food and Drug Administration and Control, it's the counterpart of SAHPRA. They wrote a report, and we learned through that report that they have detected more than 0.1 acceptable level of DEG in the batch that they have indicated. It was one batch, and this batch was manufactured by Johnson & Johnson in 2021 in May. So it is expiring end of this month. So that's how we have learned about this. Immediately, we contacted the manufacturer, who was also not aware. Then what we did, we shared the information, and we required from the manufacturer that they communicate immediately what the status is, because this was not what happened when the batch was released. So we wanted to know what's going on. And they were very, very cooperative, and both independently, we are currently running the tests just to verify this.
Would you explain to me what the part one over means? How serious would that have been for any consumer?
If indeed the presence of DEG is over 0.1%, remember, Jeremy, this is a pediatric syrup. Mm. It's Benadryl pediatric syrup, which is for the children. So this substance will be harmful to the children if consumed, and it's likely to cause acute renal failure, which is kidney problems. It's likely to cause headaches. It's likely to cause stomach or abdominal discomfort in children, diarrhea, vomiting. And in worst case scenario, it may lead to death. But Jeremy, what I want to say is that, as I indicated, that this batch was manufactured in 2021. Mm. And Johnson & Johnson does export to other regions. And these particular two batches that have been recalled, 329304 and 329303, have been exported. But we have never had any reports of adverse events or untoward side effects that might have happened. There were never reports. Usually when a patient consume a product and they experience side effects, they would alert the regulator or the pharmacist or the doctor who's treating them or the clinic. And as such, the regulator will also subsequently be informed by the health professionals and the matter would be investigated. Such report has not yet emerged, even from the export market. So even Nigeria, having detected this, they did not indicate that they have received reports from patients or from anyone because of adverse events. And what I also want to reiterate is that this batch is expiring in April 2024. Yes, and the alert came on the 10th of April.
All right. Could you detail for me the kind of company processes and checks that are typically in place to prevent incidents like this and why they might have failed in this instance?
So when it comes to medicine manufacturing processes, Johnson & Johnson, as an example, is a facility that is licensed by SAHPRA. So anyone who wants to manufacture medicines in South Africa or import medicines in South Africa, they must acquire a license. And their product must be registered by SAHPRA. So we evaluate the product for quality, safety, and efficacy. And our inspectors will go to the facility and inspect it for good manufacturing processes. And not just good manufacturing process, it must be current good manufacturing process. Johnson & Johnson was inspected also last year, and that's part of the routine inspections that SAHPRA does to the licensed and manufacturers. So this facility is good manufacturing practice approved, and by the time we issue a certificate for good manufacturing practice, we would have looked at the quality management systems related to producing a product. So the quality that is built in that product, because we speak about quality, safety, and efficacy. So the quality aspect, we look at the whole process from the raw materials that will be used. How do they test that the raw materials that they are using, the active pharmaceutical ingredient, for example, together with the excipients that will be used and the diluents, because DEG is likely to come from the excipients, propylene glycol, that would be used. So we look at, do they test their raw materials? Where do they get them from? Those vendors that are giving them those, how do they qualify those? How do they ensure that there's quality of those products? How do they test each of those raw materials? And also through the process, there is there are quality aspects and are there in-house testing and also independent testing. So there must be quality assurance. So the good manufacturing process is a process that has got standards, and SAHPRA will ensure that that process has been validated. Everything has been verified.
Mm. So let me ask you this. If that doesn't happen, is there sanction or penalty that any manufacturer would face if they are found to be wanting?
Yes, we've got offences in our legislation, and there are penalties that would be imposed. So every batch that is manufactured, because remember, Jeremy, there are many batches that would be produced of a particular product, and batch recalls are common. However, what happens is that when there is a specification of each and every product, that the product must meet the specification. And if the product does not meet a specification for whatever reason, us as the regulator, the manufacturer has to alert us, has to inform us. Mm. However, should we find out that it has failed and they did not alert the regulator, it is an offense in terms of our legislation, and we would impose our penalties based on that. So at the current moment, we are currently running tests just to make sure that we get facts, and then if there are offenses that have been committed against the Medicines Act, then we will impose our penalties.
And I'm going to thank you for that very thorough explanation, Daphne Fafudi, Manager Regulatory Compliance at SAHPRA. I do appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
All right, let's pivot now from medicine to media. And as the French broadcaster Canal Plus intensifies its plans to take over MultiChoice, it's been reported that there is now some disquiet at board level over a decision by the chair, Imtiaz Patel, who's put his retirement on hold to oversee this giant transaction. Watching all of that closely is Pietri Redlinghuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietri, welcome and thank you very much for joining us. Before we get to governance issues, there's a revised valuation now of 55 billion rand. How are you digesting that?
Good afternoon, firstly, and thank you for having us. So I think, the takeout target here is, 125 rand a share? I think that was mostly anticipated. I think that, obviously, MultiChoice shareholders are wanting to get as much bang for their buck as they possibly can. And I think from at least our perspective, 125 Rand is a fair shout. To be fully transparent, we had a position in MultiChoice, which, as the news develops around the story, the share price reacts and obviously moves towards that takeout target. We actually unloaded all our shares last week into a little bit of strength. So we no longer have any skin in the game, if you will. But from our side, it looks like it's probably going to be, a slam dunk, if you will, for the deal to go through. Obviously, there is a bit of a shareholder vote that needs to take place, and they need to get 90% of the shareholders agreeing, but I don't foresee that to be a problem.
Aside from the slam dunk there, MultiChoice surely, Pietri, should be preparing to address regulatory scrutiny that inevitably a deal of this size and magnitude is going to face.
Look, one hurdle I think that we might have is a regulatory one where we know that our government is very concerned around who the ultimate beneficial owners is and, things like BEE status and that kind of thing. If an international entity comes out, or comes and buys a local company out, I think there's going to be a little bit of concern around, what happens to BEE shareholders as well as employment stuff. How many jobs are they going to preserve? We see that to be a very big theme. I think, however, given my limited understanding, at least of how the media landscape works, I think that this creates a lot of opportunities for filmmakers and for storytellers, not just in South Africa, but in Africa, broader Africa. At the moment, we see a company like Netflix, for example, pouring, money into creating content locally. And when I say locally, I mean on the African continent. Where historically MultiChoice Group was the one to wear the hat for that, and still does do a hefty amount of investment into creating local content, but that's kind of being overshadowed by Netflix's ability to just pump a huge amount more money in. So I think that the Canal Plus MultiChoice team up expands that. If we think that sort of sub-Saharan Africa is dominated by MultiChoice and Northern Africa, middle to upper Africa is dominated by Canal Plus, you combine those two jurisdictions, you've got a much broader audience for content being made. So, filmmakers can reach a wider audience and potentially see a bit more upside on their efforts. And also you've got a sharing of resources, right? So international content that is purchased and broadcast here, cost per viewer comes down. So that creates a bit more of a profitable situation for the broadcast.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right with that observation. Canal Plus stating its ambition very clearly, and that is, and I quote, to build a global entertainment leader and take African stories to a global audience. Pietri, I want to circle back, if I can, to governance issues, if in fact there are. The chair of the company, Imtiaz Patel, has decided to postpone his retirement. He wants to push the deal over the line. Are there question marks around that decision, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think it's good to have those that are experienced with running the business to be, still at the helm when big changes like this takes place. I think, at least from my perspective, it's like, would you rather have the old hands that know the game being in charge of essentially company changing transaction, or would you prefer to have the newer, younger guys who haven't really seen this kind of thing before? Right? So I think it's quite a comfortable position to have, the old silverbacks out the helm while the change takes place. Some of the young up-and-comers in the board might not necessarily like that idea, but I think from a shareholder's perspective, it's comforting.
Point is made, but there's also been some criticism regarding, and I put in inverted commas, consultancy fees that have been paid to selected board members. Again, as someone who's watching this deal, is that a red flag?
I think so, yes. But I also understand the environment in which we operate. And if you look at many other companies, the amount they spend on consulting fees is questionable to start off with. So my opinion isn't the right one on this, but from my expectation or from my view, it's kind of like this is expected how these guys do things, you know? Whether or not it's right or wrong, I think most of us agree that you are overcharging, but they're going to do it anyway, so you might as well accept it.
All right. Well, that is one interpretation, I guess. Pietri Redlangais from Herenia Capital Advisors, thank you very much indeed. I think quite a bit more dialogue and discussion before that deal is finally pushed over the line.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Now, the Higher Education Minister, Dr. Bladen Zamandi, says he dissolved the National Student Financial Aid Scheme Board because of the members, in his words, inability to carry out and implement basic responsibilities, including the overseeing of payment of student allowances. Velian Bele speaks for the minister. He joins us now on the program. And given the long-standing issues at NSFAS, why was the board allowed to operate with these inefficiencies for such an extended period of time?
That is a valid question, right? And valid in the sense that if you look at the impact that some of the things that have not been going right at NSFAS has had, in particular on the students, that concern is very well placed and legitimate. And I also just wish to help, you know, the public understand the complexities that confronted the minister in coming to this decision. So the first one is, I try an effort to also just make the public understand what the mindset of the minister was and his attitude was in relation to the board over time. So the minister, being aware of the challenges that the board was facing and having had a number of interactions with the board, made extensive effort for over the period that the board was in place to give support to the board, including going as far as going to lobby National Treasury for extra money when the board said to the minister that the institution needs extra capacity to deal with its IT systems and the communication systems and the volume of queries from students. The minister did that. And where there was a need also to get extra capacity from the academic institutions, the minister went to speak to them. And I can list a number of interventions, but over time, the minister then came to the realization that in spite of all the effort that he has made over and above, you know, what he was supposed to do, he was of the view that he doesn't get the sense that the board is pulling its weight in complementing the effort that he was putting in, right? And this is an assessment that he would have made over time. And he then found himself left with no other choice but to essentially terminate or dissolve the board. So point that I'm making here is that it took us so long, if you view it from the outside, because the minister has given the board one chance after the other to correct those deficiencies because they had asked for that opportunity. And this would have contributed, right, to what is legitimately viewed as the minister having taken so long. But the point that I'm simply making is that the minister has made a series of interventions which did not yield the type of results that he would have wanted. And he did not want the board to fail. But unfortunately, it has come to what it is.
All right. What immediate actions then are now being prioritized to stabilize this institution?
The most obvious one was the announcement of the administrator, Thembisa Nomvalo, on Friday through the Government Gazette. And he was unveiled at the media briefing on Sunday. So part of his immediate actions include that to make sure that the outstanding student allowances are paid, and where there was a need to pay outstanding allowances for those institutions that defaulted in submitting the data, that is done. I am aware that yesterday a first round of allowances, especially the outstanding ones, were paid yesterday, the 15th of April. But his other priorities also to make sure that the thorny issue of the service providers who were appointed irregularly by the previous board, that matter is sorted out, which means the contracts of those service providers are terminated as recommended by the Werksmann's attorney's report. And then he is also required to make sure that the capacity as it relates to handling of student queries to the IT systems and the other online systems, that is sorted out. Because one of the big problems that NSFAS is facing at the moment is that they simply don't have the capacity to respond to student queries on time and efficiently. So that would constitute some of his immediate tasks. And he would report to the department and the minister every 3 months. And his period of service is for 12 months.
Could you explain to me how many contracts of service providers are going to be terminated?
If I'm not mistaken, right, it is four, if I recall correctly. The Werksmann report has identified four service providers.
You've also identified the importance of expediting outstanding payments. What sort of timeline or deadline have you set yourself in that respect?
The payments are happening as we speak now. So let me just explain how it works so that we also understand the timeline. So NSFAS pays these allowances on a month-to-month basis. So universities and TVET colleges are supposed to submit what is called registration data. If, for instance, for April, they would have to submit the data in March. So some universities or TVET colleges have defaulted. So it's done on a month-to-month basis. So NSFAS gives you a payment date every month, and then they say they pay on this particular date. So it's done on a month-to-month basis, and they determine that on the basis of the data that they receive. So that would be the deadline. So it would shift every month depending on when they get the data and whether they think they are ready to pay and whether the payment roll, but it's done monthly.
The single biggest problem I think you probably have is restoring trust among students, parents, and educational institutions as far as the system is concerned. What are your plans in that respect?
No, we agree, Red. This has also, in a sense, tempered with the public trust in the institution, and there's legitimate reason why there would be that concern from the perspective of the public. And our own assessment, Jeremy, is that the best way to restore public trust is to just make sure that NSFAS just does its core business, that you must not focus on PR and other things. And by its core business, I mean that students are paid what is due to them and it happens on time, right? For me, that is the best possible way you can re-earn whatever trust that has been lost. Any other thing would be an added bonus. But for us, the best way to do it, NSFAS should be able to pay students on time, and it should be as seamless as possible. Because once we are able to make the student experience as seamless as possible, I am sure the issue of public trust will be gained automatically. So for now, that's really what we are trying to focus on. That's where all the effort is going, sorting out this payments and making sure the student payments are on time.
Velian Bele speaks for the Higher Education Minister, Dr. Bladen Zamandi. Thank you very much for talking to me.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
We're going to finish with a story, and we spent much time last week looking at the stress that young chartered accountants and aspirant accountants are facing in the workplace. Now, allied to that, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group says that 20 million of 60 million South Africans are struggling with mental health issues and have little to no access to mental health care. Also, only one psychiatrist per 100,000 people, which is a real issue. Three psychologists, by the way, for that same number. That is a real issue. I want to talk now to Fatima Sidat from the from SADAG. She is the development manager. Fatima, welcome to you. And first of all, within the workplace, and particularly the higher up the food chain you go, are you seeing an increase in stress and anxiety?
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you so much for having us on your show. So, it's a very interesting question that you ask, and through people that we have been interacting with and the calls that we've been getting, we are noticing there's a high level of stress amongst people that are at the workplace or that are unemployed. And through that, other mental illnesses are coming through as well. So you're getting a bit of depression, you're getting a bit of anxiety. And it's taking a toll on many people's lives at the moment.
How does that manifest itself?
It's basically, you know, we live in an environment where there's so many external factors that are impacting us. So we have in, you know, load shedding, we have in water shedding, people are in debt, people are having financial stresses. All of those underlying factors or causes are having an impact on people and making it even more stressful for them. And you can see when they are going through those stresses, it's impacting their day-to-day activities. So they're struggling to wake up every morning. They're struggling to sleep at night. They're struggling to even, you know, do basic things they used to do that was easy for them. So you know, with each individually, they do experience it differently, but you can see there are people out there that are struggling and are going through a lot of stresses at the moment and are in need of that added support.
Fatima, we ran a series of interviews last week on how this is applicable to young chartered accountants. And one of the threads that came through in the conversation is they feel marginalized. When I say they, a selection thereof, they feel marginalized and are made to feel incompetent. Is that something that is common within the paradigm that we're talking about? And again, how do they get over that feeling?
It is indeed something that's really interesting that you just pointed out. I think, you know, those feelings and perceptions are due to what stresses are in the industry. And there are other sectors, and, you know, workplace stresses do place all these added expectations and feelings, and people's different perceptions on you are reflected. So it is very, very stressful out there. But saying that, there are, you know, support systems and things that businesses can put into place to test how they're impacting on the people that are working for them. And then implementing some sort of intervention, whether it is a room where they, you know, a stress-free room where they can just calm down, or for the anxiety levels to decrease, or to do deep breathing exercises. There's a lot of things that you can implement within the workplace to create that good environment, because in added, like, a lot of businesses do want the best out of their workforce. And in order to get what they want, they need to create a very good mentally healthy system within their workplace.
The question, of course, is, are businesses doing that sufficiently? Are they stepping up? We are going to leave it there. Fatima Sidat from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, thank you very much indeed for that perspective. Just before I leave you, on our online poll yesterday, we spoke about internet speeds in South Africa reportedly being quicker. I asked you if you were seeing it, still too slow or not necessarily critical to your life. And most of our respondents say still too slow and are looking for more speed. No real surprise there. Today, and this pertains to one of our key interviews, the firing of the Nesfas board. Do you see it as a positive move? It's not going to make any difference at all, or it's simply going to put more stress on students. If you have a view on that, I'll invite you right now to go to MoneyWeb on Twitter X or to our LinkedIn page. MoneyWeb at midday. We are live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Goodbye to you, and thank you for listening.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.